Joining us now in our studios is Superintendent Dr. Matt Hillman of the Northfield School District. Matt, thank you so much for coming in today.
Well, good morning, Jeff. It's a gray morning here, but, you know, it is 30 degrees, I think I heard Bob say.
Yeah.
So we will take that in a heartbeat.
Yeah, you know, and Bob also said that there could be historic amounts of snow on the way to parts of Minnesota this weekend, but it looks like it's going to be other parts, which is good. Hopefully we can make it through the rest of the month of April. We're going to have the busiest May in history as far as the sports schedule. Everything's being kind of pushed back.
Well, you know, when you think about that, Jeff, too, you know, we've had a circumstance probably 2 or 3 years ago where we had something similar, and when these games get pushed back, students end up with sometimes 5 games in a week. You know, I remember a year where I think our baseball team had 3 weeks where they played like 12 games and weren't ever able to have a practice, you know, because of the inability to get on the fields, you know, early in the spring. So most of those games will get played. Students will be they're getting a lot of practice right now, and they'll have a lot of games, you know, in the next couple of weeks. So,
you know, that's the worst part of it, too. Indoor practices, you want to be outside playing, running around, jumping, throwing, whatever you do, but inside, kind of frustrating.
Well, you know, what I think is that I was telling Terry before I came on that the way that I look at Minnesota weather is that this summer, it's got to be going to average, you know, 74 degrees, sunny during the day, a little bit of rain overnight, no humidity and no mosquitoes, because that's the only fair payback.
Yeah, I think
for
so.
This winter.
I think so. Hey, let's get into last night's meeting of the Northfield School Board. I want to talk about some of the items. Let's start off with you had a peer helper update. I'm presuming that's students helping their peers. Is that correct?
Absolutely. And so one of the district strategic plan priorities is about making sure that we have an intentional effort for social and emotional health for all. We've talked about social and emotional learning a number of times, Jeff, over the past couple of years, and you know how it's such a foundation for everything else that, you know, students do. If students don't have their basic social and emotional needs met, you know, being able to learn is a challenging thing. And so, as you know, we've implemented the second step curriculum at our elementary school and at our middle school. And when we're looking at how do we support students' social emotional learning at the high school, what the research says is it's got to be more in real time. And so Carrie Duba is a high school school psychologist, and she and high school principal Joel Lear had, you know, looked at how can we add another layer of social emotional support for our students at the high school level. And they started off by doing some research. They found a program that had been very successfully implemented in a couple of other school districts relatively close to us. Hastings has had this program for the last 8 years. Hudson, Wisconsin for about 20 years. And locally we're calling it Students Supporting Students. And so it's fascinating. It starts off with saying we want to create this group of students within the school who other kids trust, who, if they're having some of the normal struggles of teenagership and they'd like to have someone confidential to talk to, who they know has a little bit of training, that they can make that connection. And so how the program works is that it's not the adults who pick the students for the program to be the students who help other students. What Carrie and Joel actually did is they actually asked high school kids grade by grade, you know, if you need to talk about something, you know, who are kids in your grade level that you think people go to, you know, to get advice and to chat and discuss things with them. And so the students who were invited, 27 of them to be exact, they were recommended by their peers, and they're relatively equally distributed between 9th grade and 12th graders. And it's not, to be very clear, it's not a counseling program because counseling requires a license and it's a specific medical term. These are students who are trained to listen first. They're trained to make sure that they can help direct kids to other resources if needed. They are also trained in what they shouldn't be doing. You know, and so if a student, they will have to report things if a student's in a particular crisis where there might be something, you know, that would need to involve law enforcement or the fact that they are, actually it's more if they are concerned about harming themselves or harming someone else, that would be something that they are taught how to stop that conversation, you know, how to redirect it. They're taught how to help get a student who's got some issues to an adult who can help them, you know, from a professional perspective. And so this is just the latest. We've talked about our academic coaches in the past.
Mm-hmm.
We also have our LINK program at the high school, which matches upperclassmen with incoming freshmen to provide that support. It's another layer of us trying to empower our students to be able to help one another. So far this year, the Hazelden and Betty Ford Clinic, it created this curriculum. Two full days of training last fall. Some very positive feedback from the trainers, you know, about the level of our students. So far, they have logged 100 different conversations around this, and Carrie says she believes it would be actually quite a bit more. But when the kids are learning how to log, you know, they don't say who they met with, right? But they simply go ahead and say, "Hey, I had a conversation with a peer. Here's generally what the topic was about. Here was the date and the time." And as they're talking with the students said, "Well, we actually help people a lot more than that, but you know, there's some of them that we don't want to skew the data, so we don't put the conversation." And so they are helping them understand that yes, even the hallway conversation with someone who has approached you because of your role can be something that's counted. But as I had said last night at the board meeting, think about those 100 meetings. The potential consequence of any one of them not happening, you know, if a student is feeling alone or a student is not feeling that they have someone who they can trust and connect with, can be really challenging for those students in terms of their own mental health, in terms of their own efficacy. And so, you know, 100 visits so far through the first year, I think is pretty impressive, and I think it shows that, you know, our students trust these students who are on the team.
Now, when for the students, do they talk with, like, would a ninth grader talk with a ninth grader? Are they free to go to the 10th or 11th or 12th grader or just whoever they feel comfortable with? Are there certain, there's no assigned person
You're
getting out of this.
Absolutely right. There is no assigned person. Actually, what, as you and I both know, with technology continuing to integrate in our lives every day, as you might imagine, there are QR codes through the whole building, and on every student's iPad, there is a link to the student supporting students homepage. Now, that includes more than just this particular student supporting student program. It also has a link to the academic student coaching. It's got some other resources that they can go to. But what happens is a student goes online. They actually fill out a form. They select their name, or excuse me, they select their grade level. And then they, the student requesting help, actually can request a specific one of the student helping student team members. So it could be a ninth grader asking for a senior for help. It could be a ninth grader asking a ninth grader. What Carrie Duba, our school psychologist, is saying is that it seems to be more around peer groups, because as you get older, your peer group, especially at the high school, tends to be more about what kinds of activities are you involved in. So, for example, if you've got students who are involved in theater, that involves students in grades 9 through 12. It very well could be that a senior person sees someone who they've been in a play with on the list and who may be a sophomore, and they say, you know, hey, I trust this person. I want to chat with them. So it's an intentional match. Now, the person who gets matched, if there's some kind of discomfort, you know, in terms of if they say, you know, I'm not comfortable, they just simply have to talk to Mrs. Duba and they'll make other arrangements. So.
Okay. Interesting program. It'll be interesting to see. Maybe sometime in the future we can talk about that, do a little more follow-up on that.
And they're collecting quite a bit of data, and that's really important because we're trying to make sure that we are able to look at the program and see the kinds of impact that it's making.
Let's move on. You had additional licensed special education staff approved for next year?
Well, and actually we didn't approve it quite yet, Jeff.
Okay.
What we did is we just proposed that in general, when we are looking at some kind of staffing addition, almost all the time, there are a few exceptions, and we'll have one here that I'll talk about in a little bit. We usually have it proposed at one board meeting and then not acted on until the next, because again, as good stewards of the district funds, we want to make sure that the board, you know, has an opportunity to make sure that they think about it, they reflect upon it, and they can ask any detailed questions they have about any additions to the budget. But this is for next year. It's a reasonably substantial increase of 2.45 licensed special education staff for next year. And unlike a lot of other areas in our school, there are several areas within special education where we have to meet requirements that are set forth by the state for what are called workload limits. And so that's a sliding scale depending on the student's disability. Students who have more severe disabilities, there's a lower ratio for the student number of students to teacher on the caseload. With you know, lesser intense disabilities, like a specific learning disability, that might be a higher ratio of student to teacher. But we do have projecting ahead at our middle school next year needing to add an autism spectrum disorder neurobiological teacher to meet the caseload and requirements there. An additional special education resource teacher at Bridgewater, At our high school, looking just to increase by 0.2 FTE, so think about that as about 1/5 of the day to meet the needs at our high school. And our social work at Longfellow, if you think about it, Longfellow is a very interesting building, right? Because we have our earliest students, we have our early childhood special education, we have our preschool, but we also have in that building our Area Learning Center, which is an alternative high school program that serves roughly around 60 students for most of the year. So our school social worker at that building works with can work with 3-year-olds and 18-year-olds. And so as we've seen an increase in the need for social work assistance in terms of special education, we are seeing an increase there of a 0.25 FTE.
Okay.
And so this is unlike other areas where the school board has quite a bit of latitude. When it comes to special education, these morally imperative services that we're providing for kids with disabilities, the state actually has a little bit more say than we do because some of these things are outlined in state rule set forth by the Department of Ed.
All right. Once again, Superintendent Matt Hillman is with us from the Northfield School District. I want to talk about, you had in your report last night, people, students who English is not their first language. Tell us more about that.
So we have a real strong English learners program across the district. And when students come to us where English is not their first language and they qualify for English learners, and remember, every student who whose English is where their first language is not English does not qualify for English learner support. There's a lot of things that go into it, some specific testing that happens. But you get a range, you know, of students in terms of their level of English. It could be that their, you know, parents may have a primary language at home and that they learned that language to begin with, so they don't have the kind of context that students who grew up in an English-speaking home may have. Actually, research says that'll be good for them down the line, but there's a transitional period. But one of the more challenging things that we face is when we have a student who is what we call new to country. So if we have a student who is new to country, it depends upon what their circumstances were in a previous in their home country. So in many times when we get students from another country, they may have come from a place where there was civil war, where their formal education in their home country was interrupted. So not only do they have the challenge of learning English, they also have the challenge of learning the school. How does an American school operate, which is actually quite different from many schools across the world? So there's a need for some additional support when there's new-to-country students who come in. And typically we have that built-in flexibility. We did have some students who moved in this spring at the middle school that just required a little bit of additional assistance for the rest of the year just to help get them acclimated. We don't believe that they're going to need that kind of assistance long-term. But so we're hiring an educational assistant at the middle school specifically to help for the rest of the year these couple of students who are new to country, help get them acclimated, give them a baseline. We anticipate going into next year that they will not require that kind of support. And the good news on this is the board had to approve it last night, but we're also able to use federal Title III funds to be able to help offset that cost. So just imagine yourself having to leave where you grew up, and let's say that you didn't get to go to school every day for whatever reason, and now you're cast most likely, if you think about in our particular case, I'm cast into a place where now there's all this snow on the ground. It's a lot colder than the place that I'm coming from. I don't know the language. I don't know the customs. You know, going to a school where I switch class periods every 50 minutes, it can be overwhelming. And so, you know, we look at making sure we can support those students as they come in and make sure that we set them up for success. And our English Learners Department is excellent. They will get students there. It takes some time. It takes some time. But they are very good at what they do.
Do you have a lot? You know, we think of English as a second language, those students, mainly as Spanish being the primary language is certainly not the case across the board, though. Do you have many students who come from a land with that doesn't speak English or Spanish, a different type of language?
So, Jeff, you're right. Here in Northfield, the large majority of our second language students are students whose first language is other than English is Spanish. And mostly those students do come from Mexico. We do see some who come from some other South American countries. We have seen an influx, a small number of students who are coming from, say, East Africa. in terms of either Somalia or South Sudan or some of those areas.
Mm-hmm.
And so we do have some students who have been coming from some East African countries, but at this point, the large majority of our students coming to us where English is not their first language is still Spanish.
All right. Once again, Matt Hillman with us, Superintendent of Schools in Northfield. We had you in a couple of weeks ago to talk about facilities, and facilities was talked about last night as well at the school board meeting. What did you go over?
So, you know, as your listeners may remember, mm-hmm. Back in February, after the bond referendum was not successful, where the voters, told us that our presentation wasn't ready for prime time yet on November 7th, we reflected upon, did a lot of discussing with people in the community about next steps, and I talked with the board about bringing together a cross-section of Northfield School District stakeholders to look at the current master facilities plan, really give it the once-over, and say what's next. And so what I shared with the board last night is just what that next step plan is. They had authorized me to go ahead and put that together a month or so, a couple months ago. And so basically what we have coming up is on next Monday, April 16th, and then on Tuesday, April 24th, and then on Monday, April 30th, we're going to have a series of three meetings. Really pleased. We invited approximately 35 people from across Northfield School District to participate in this team. We intentionally looked to make sure that we got folks representing a variety of stakeholder groups. So we have a group that folks who are business owners in the community. We've really recruited folks from our agricultural community to make sure that they're part of this. We have looked for retirees. We have looked for folks who are working professionals. So they may not own a business. They may not be in agriculture, but they are working professional in some other way, shape, or form. And throughout those four stakeholder groups, we really look to make sure we had a good mix of parents, you know, people who have kids in the district, and also, you know, people who don't have children in the district. So as of last night, we have 30 of those 35 confirmed to participate. We're going to use a strategy that will help facilitate discussion about the current plan in terms of what parts of that plan are things that resonated with people as this group has heard and talked to people. Are there parts that were just out of bounds and should be, you know, rethought? So we'll do that over a period of three meetings, and the goal at the end is to have this team develop a recommendation for the board. You know, that recommendation could be to go forward with some kind of bond issue to address some of the facilities needs that we do have. It could be to say, you know what, you got to go back to the drawing board and rethink this whole thing. It could be that we like some of these projects, but maybe the timing just isn't quite right yet. So our goal is for that group to have a recommendation to the board one way or the other. Over a period of three meetings. What we think with three meetings will allow for substantial discussion, but it will also avoid us admiring the problem for too long. And so we really want to make sure that we can be intentional, have rich and deep discussion, but also come up with a decision, a recommendation, if you will, so that the board can make a decision on what our next steps are with our facilities.
All right. And that is a conversation I'm sure we're going to be continuing in the future.
We would love to. Can I mention one more thing?
One more thing, sure.
The Minnesota Department of Education did honor our finance department with the annual finance award, and so that's the sixth year in a row our department has won that award, and it's about timely reporting and quality audit reports and those kinds of things. So just congratulations to Val Murdestorf, our finance director, and her team, really doing a lot of work behind the scenes, and we're happy that they're honored by the department.
All right. Job well done. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff.
Superintendent Dr. Matt Hillman of the Northfield School District.